It's becoming one of gaming's biggest events, the Penny Arcade Expo. This year, the convention moved from one small building in Boston, Massachusetts, to a bigger building in Boston, Massachusetts. 70,000 people approximately attended this three-day event, and rightly so. It's a pilgrimage for gamers of all stripes, console gamers, tabletop gamers, arcade gamers. Pretty much, if you enjoy any manner of game, chances are your interests were represented here. Our panel and I will discuss our observations and recap our experiences from the three-day madness that was PAX East 2011, right here on Downloadable Content. Welcome, friends, Romans, countrymen, to this special episode of Downloadable Content, PAX East Edition. I'm Brian, and we are joined by Ben.
Hello, everybody.
Wyatt.
Hello.
Ian.
Hello, everybody.
And from beyond the internet, speaking to us via text, our own plus one, Jen.
She says hello and has waved.
So, very, very quickly, PAX East 2011 just ended. Madness, all of it, but enjoyable. My very first convention, exposition, whatever. I am no longer a virgin. And I must say, I was very, very glad I went. It was exactly that, just this huge convention of gaming for all to see and hear. Miles and miles and miles of gaming bliss. Getting there Friday afternoon, all awake and refreshed, that would change. That would change, no thanks to Wyatt, who was probably running on about 30 minutes of sleep the entire weekend.
Hey, I had fun. I had a lot of fun.
Although, by Sunday, you were about ready to drop dead.
Hey, it was worth it. Totally worth it.
I can hear how gravelly your voice is sounding at the moment. I'm assuming that's a byproduct of the lack of sleep.
It's a byproduct of me having to go from 3 energy drinks in the weekend to none. So, yeah, it was a good time. I mean, the 300 drinks kind of calls it out.
Well, good. Good, good, good. Yes, Jen, I agree. Lack of sleep is only part of the adventure. However, I would have liked to have been a bit more refreshed instead of coming back to the hotel at, you know, fuck all in the AM and only to be tickled awake by Wyatt around 9.
That was it. I mean, you know, to kind of just leap right into the discussion, that was the great thing about PAX. There was just so much to do at all times. I was worried that maybe there'd be dead spots, and just by the end of it, I felt like I'd only seen half of what was going on, if less than that. And just, it was great to, you know, end at 2 and be like, oh, we have to go home, and then realize, holy crap, we've only got about like 5 hours time to sleep, you know, get there, pass out by 3, and then try to wake up at 9 to prepare to go back in again. So this goes to show you.
It's devotion or insanity or both.
I think it's the combination, really.
Yes, we'll get to daylight savings time, Jen.
We also lost an hour from that. Thank you very much.
Oh, God.
Stupid farmers.
Stupid government. So, to open, we got there around 4 or so Friday afternoon. And yep. Just walking into the Boston Exposition and Convention Center, the first thing that hit my addled brain once I walked in was giant fucking convention.
Yeah.
Just immense, just miles and miles in all directions, but at least the space of the expo floor was at least the size of a football field. And that way you had the expo hall in which various publishers, developers, game companies were all showing off whatever wares they had.
You had a really good mix in there. You had a mix of, you know, the big name publishers to small, well, I guess not indie, but, you know,
yes,
Xbox Live.
No, there were indie. Definitely some indie developers there, and I think it's really, really important to actually get a level playing field when you can have some indie developers sitting right next to Microsoft and right next to Capcom and the truckload of other developers there. You know, it's... I think that's huge.
Yeah, that's what I love about the PAX Expo is that you have that. And you had the ones in between, like Bastion and Skulls of the Shogun, the ones that in between they're on Xbox Live. They're published and they're well known now, but you have that huge gamut in terms of just the game developers alone, not to mention everyone else that was in that expo hall.
Wyatt, you do know Bastion's a really small team. That game was made by 6 people. Like that's pretty damn indie.
Yeah.
As far as you know, your development team. So I don't know that you should necessarily be lumping them in with larger development houses. What they've done is impressive.
In between, because terms are kind of malleable, and I guess indie means really, really small, or I guess
6 people is really, really small.
Yeah.
Or don't get a lot of credibility that I haven't heard before. Bastion and Skulls of the Shogun, other ones like that, have been covered a few times already. So, you know, maybe it's just I'm working on it with a different definition here. It was really great to see a little bit of...
That's fine. The way you just described it, I didn't want you to think like, no, that's which is a game that I'm sure you're going to want to talk about a lot, but it's like the definition of an indie developer isn't always necessarily we haven't heard of them. I'd think of it more of, they're small, 6 people, that is a tiny team. But it is great that they were able to draw so much attention on the show floor. I mean, that's the beautiful thing. If you have a quality product, people do line up for it. You know, these are the people who want to find new and exciting avenues. So I think that it was really a perfect venue for even a tiny team like them to be there.
I agree. I took some time at the indie booth just to see what was being offered, what they were showing off, because it is, in my opinion, refreshing to see these little studios, these little companies trying to compete with the big guys. You know, sometimes it's really nice to see a game, and a good game at that, you know, that can compete right up there with the big boys, Microsoft, Capcom, what have you. I'll give you an example. There was a company at the indie area called Owlchemy Games, and they were showing off a game that is currently in development called Smuggler Truck. I don't know if any of you got around to seeing it.
I've heard about that one. Isn't that the immigration thing?
Yes, it was created. It was an idea. The issue being immigration and how very, very hard it is to legally immigrate into this country. So basically, it because it's so hard to do so legally, it's, you know, getting here illegally is infinitely easier. All you have to do is just drive over. The start menu of this game shows you, you know, you have the different levels, and then there's one option called legal immigration. If you click on legal immigration, it just takes you to a black screen. This is the humor of the game. It takes you to a black screen with just white text and a countdown clock saying, if you choose to immigrate here legally, you'll be a legal immigrant in 19 years, 11 months. You know, so on and so forth, which is just how long the government takes to shuffle all the paperwork around. But the gameplay itself, I was using the iPad version of the game, and what you have to do is you're in this pickup truck, and by moving the iPad a certain way will cause it to accelerate, another way will cause it to decelerate, and so on, and that's your basic control scheme. You're in this pickup truck full of illegal immigrants, and your task is to drive them to the border, the United States border. And along the way, the immigrants will pop out babies. And you have to catch the babies so that they don't, you know, fall onto the road and die. And and you get points based on how many immigrants you manage to get to the U.S. at the end of the level. And I thought it was just an interesting satirical concept. I'd actually spoke with a couple of the developers about this game, and I said, you know, because you're touching on an issue such as immigration, did you piss off some people in the process? They said, yes, we did. They managed to piss off Fox News.
Well, that's just a sign that they're doing their jobs right.
Funnily enough, George Lopez got wind of this game, and they featured, and he featured this game and the developing company Alchemy on his show, and he was praising it. He's saying, "Now this is a Latino experience."
He's incorporated that into his comedy routines before. He made a joke at one point that, like, he woke up one day and suddenly, there are U.S. forces in Iraq. And he said, because, you know, we have plenty of this people in this country who know how to cross borders illegally very quietly. And, you know, so he's incorporated that sort of thing before. So I'm not too surprised. But, I mean, I could have expected backlash either way out of the Latin community.
But, so yeah, I mean, it was a nice, strong indie showing. I'm going around the expo floor on day one. I really wanted to try the upcoming Mortal Kombat game, but for a lot of it, the gamer line was just way too long. Same thing for the Nintendo booth. I really, really wanted to, you know, fondle the 3DS for a little bit. And
that was dirty.
Yeah, well, but there was just no way in hell I was getting into that booth at all, ever. However, the giant Pikachu lording over the entire expo hall was a plus.
I love that giant Pikachu. I wanted to take it home and feed it and pet it and call it Wyatt because that's who it reminded me of.
Anything on the expo floor, really stand out to you? Anyone?
Well, I'll tell you, the Red Faction is the first thing you see when you really get in there. The Red Faction Armageddon display. They had the enormous mechanical suit there where the line kind of wrapped around the booth and you could have your turn stepping inside this mechanical suit that opened up. I think it was a really good grab for people to pull them right in that direction. I think the placement was good too, because I mean there was just no way you were missing that enormous mobile suit.
Wyatt?
What I found, you know, going to Red Faction, it was a great setup. They had a really great eye catcher. And they had a really good way of getting the audience involved. They had, a little bit of their game set up. And the great thing about it is that they had Ruin set up, which is pretty much a very simple go and destroy absolutely everything. For those that don't know Red Faction, it's a third-person shooter, which is a lot of fun because you just rip everything apart. It's great, you know, a lot of fun just to see what you can do while you're going after your enemies. You can blow up the buildings that they're in instead of having to go right at them. But Ruin is just destroy the buildings. And what they had set up, it was a contest. The person that ruined the most amount of stuff every day got a Red Faction-themed iPad. And they had this huge TV set up with all the scores, and I think it was like about 14 million to the top end of 14 million almost every day. And people would just line up and go again around the table. If you got 8 million points, you got a shirt, which I think my best was 13.5 million, but that doesn't matter. What matters is that they had a really good setup about how to draw people into the experience, have them play through. And, you know, they didn't get to see a whole bunch of the game, but they got to know what the feel was like, and they had a really good setup for that, so they should definitely be commended on that end. Going back to the fact that I'll switch over to another booth that I stopped by, Bastion, which we kind of mentioned before. I've been looking at Bastion for several months now, ever since I saw the trailer on YouTube, and I heard about it, I think, through Kotaku at first. I was like, this is a game that I want to see, and when I saw that booth, I sat down, I waited in line, and it was fantastic. I'll let someone else come in, because I know some other guys got to play it too.
Well, talk about your gaming experience. What is Bastion? What does it do? What makes it stand out from all the other indie developers or indie games, rather?
What I love about Bastion is that it tells a story. And, I mean, you know, all games tell a story. They should. But Bastion kind of immerses you in it. Because everything that you do has this great narratable voice that if I try to emulate it, I'll botch it horribly. So I'm not going to. But he narrates everything that you do. And I talked with some of the guys in the booth. And I love the fact that the narrator throughout the entire experience, what they're saying is going to be about 6 to 8 hours, never repeats himself throughout the entire game. They made sure of that. Kind of went through it. It has a great artistic feel. It's like a top-down action platformer. Think a little bit Diablo-esque, I suppose. Am I right on that, guys?
Yeah, I can definitely see that. Go ahead, Ian.
No, I'm sorry. It did feel kind of Diablo-esque. To be totally honest, I didn't get a chance to actually sit down and play it, but I did watch it along with Ben for quite a while. And it's very Diablo-esque, but it's also very Tales of Symphonia-ish, if I may be so bold. And I think Ben should take this from here, because I'm just not a fan of that particular genre.
Go ahead.
It's really the setup. I didn't get a chance to play it, but just everything that I observed from it, the setup seemed to be very much action RPG, almost in the vein of, like Ian said, a little bit of the Tales of Symphonia, or the other popular choice is the Kingdom Hearts series, where it seemed to be just in terms of purely battle style, where you could level up and you did have items that would level up and different potions and things like that, but it wasn't a menu-based combat. It was more real-time-based combat. Why it's referring to with the narrator that was the interesting twist, if you will, or hook, was that the narrator will really literally go through and just do that. Every, you know, so much of what you do is just, you know, told through this tale. Part of it is kind of foretelling, so he'll kind of invite you to pick up a weapon or an object. Part of it will apparently, according to the developer, shift a little bit depending on how you play through the game. And one goal that they had set out was that at no point did they want you to ever hear the same line of dialogue twice in the same game. So that's really a very ambitious goal if you think about having your enough dialogue and having it be adaptable enough so that if you do make changes to the game, that the game is going to shift along with you. Now, whether or not they can actually pull that off is, of course, a different story. But
definitely it was a good idea.
Definitely a great idea. Visually was very, very impressive. And it's not something that, you know, obviously we mentioned this was a game developed by a team of 6 people. So this is not something that's going to be, you know, it's not going to be released as a AAA, you know, $60 title. This is going to be an Xbox Live and PC downloadable title, which is fine, which is probably the appropriate form for it. But it's the idea here is still that I think as an indie developer, they're trying to show that even if they're not going to create a product that they expect to sell for that kind of money, they want to put out the best value that they can for what they're creating. And honestly, to me, it seemed like it was a very, very well put together title. Obviously, not having played it, I couldn't tell you how smooth and responsive the controls were, but I saw all the players. Nobody seemed to be making any criticisms. Everybody, pretty much across the board that we saw, sat down, played for their 10 or 15 minutes or whatever it was. The only time people got up or moved was when the game was over. So if you want to talk about an immersive experience, you know, you're in the floor of a giant convention hall with all these exhibitors going around, and at the same time, these guys were still just so wrapped up in this game that for that 10 or 15 minutes, nothing else mattered. So
that's beautiful. Yeah. That is beautiful.
If immersion was what they were going for, I think they really hit it.
That's the thing, is that, you know, you had it, and each TV had a headphones. If any of you guys that are listening to this are going to look up this game, or you're going to try playing the demo when the demo comes out, put on a really good set of headphones, or, you know, play when you got no one else around, or, you know, no one's going to talk over, and just listen to the narrator, because that was half of it. You can sit there and watch the game, you're like, oh, it looks pretty cool, but when you start hearing it, that's what really sets it apart, so that's what I invite you to do.
Excellent.
They also had a really good gimmick for, well, not gimmick, but way of getting their word out. They had the Bastion handkerchiefs that if you took a picture with it and it was on their tweet, you get an iPad. So everybody had these handkerchiefs, bandanas flying around the hall. And I love the fact, going back to the original, that it is an Xbox Live. It is a, you know, quick $20, $15 game. And that's why I found myself actually spending more time at were those sort of booths, the indie booths.
All right, if I can interrupt, I'm sorry. If I can interrupt for just a second
Go ahead.
On Bastion, I was just going to play the devil's advocate here for a second. And, you know, admittedly, RPGs, as far as real-time or action-based RPGs, you know, it's a very wide category. They generally aren't my cup of tea. Specifically watching Bastion, I had to admit, it wasn't exactly something that I would specifically go for, but, you know, there were just a couple things. You know, you guys talk about immersion and, you know, how immersive it was, but, I mean, you know, just, and again, just to play the devil's advocate here, because I am a dick, I would like to just kind of, I would just kind of like I don't know, throw my viewpoint out there that, I kind of feel like I was being drowned. You know, I was being immersed in water, but, you know, the narrator is there all the time. You know, at least every minute or so, he will point something out to you that may or may not be absolutely obvious to you. And as a gamer myself, you know, I find that, you know, it's novel. I'll give you that. It's absolutely novel. And I give them a lot of credit for that. But I feel like it's a little bit pushy, and I feel like if they really want it to take off, I feel like maybe they should put in an option to let the narrator be turned off, or at least hushed a little bit, unless something is absolutely critical that needs to be said. Because I just, you know, looking at this thing, you know, he says something every 5 seconds. He describes how something falls from the sky, and it is immersive. You know, he has a gravelly kind of Western voice. It adds to the overall, not dystopic, but more or less, you know, gravelly background, which matches his voice. You know, it's kind of industrial a little bit, and, you know, you know, the voice does add to that, but I mean, if I'm being followed by this guy for a really long time, and especially as immersive as these things can be, you know, we can talk about hours at a time, this guy talking in your ear, especially if you are going to get a headset, I feel like that may not be, you know, it may hamper the game a little bit, even though it's one of its strongest selling points. What do you guys think about that?
That was actually a concern that I've thought about in the past, and I was like, okay, maybe a few hours, this might get a little old. When I was showing the first trailer to people a few months ago when it first came out, they were like, maybe it might take, you know, wait if it's, you keep hearing this over and over again. But then when I talked with the developers and I saw this extended demo that you got to play through, which is that first part that's on the trailer and a whole bunch more time, I fell in love with it, you know, just to have it in my hand. Maybe it's not going to be everyone's cup of tea because they are trying something different, and that's totally valid. And, so, I mean, definitely try it out. Definitely look up the trailer for yourself if you're interested. I know I am, because I love that idea of storytelling. And I don't think I'll get bored of the voice as much as I thought I would at first. So, you know, give it a shot for yourself,
I guess is what I'm saying. So this game is out or is coming out?
It's coming out. It's coming out, yeah.
Okay. We're getting a text here from Jen. She was she mentioned that she liked the D&D booth. She mentioned the D&D booth. I did see it over, you know, the course of the 3-day weekend. Basically, the D&D booth, how it was set up, there was these, it looked like a castle. Right in the, pretty much in the center of the expo floor. These large castle walls around a giant game board where you could play as pieces in the game. Jen also liked a lot of the things over at the miniatures section. I did see people, they were painting minis. They did some demos. There were demos all through the tabletop gaming area. There was for all different types of games. There was D&D everywhere, Magic the Gathering everywhere, other types of card games. I picked up the Resident Evil card game. That was enjoyable.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun. There were some panels, some little demos over at the D&D section that I wanted to check out, but ultimately I didn't get to them next time, because I am going next time, damn it. So
let's hope they fix the dates for next year. The only information I could find for next year was that it falls on Easter and Passover.
Uh-oh. Oh, nice.
Oh, no.
Oh, dear. Oh, boy.
Moving away from the expo floor, because the expo floor was basically was the bottom level, and it was just miles of everything. Moving away from the expo floor, going up a floor, we went to... You were instantly greeted by the BioShock booth and the Plants vs. Zombies booth. I swear, I saw hundreds of those cones. People wearing those cones all day long. And, I am not even familiar with Plants vs. Zombies at all, so I'm going, why are people wearing traffic cones on their head? Is there something I'm missing? Although, I did check out the BioShock Infinite booth. And looking forward to that game, but what I was most interested in on the next floor, there was the console free play. There were just
spent hours there.
Hours. Now, basically, the console free play room was exactly that. There was several rooms and just devoted to here's video game consoles. Go check out a game. Go play. Have fun.
I think I know I'd probably spent more time in that room than I did anywhere else in the con.
There was I said
to be fair. To be fair, the as gamers we tend to devote massive quantities of time to gaming that we may not actually devote to other areas such as walking, looking, enjoying
breathing.
The sun and or breathing.
Yeah,
so
yeah, breathing's overrated.
As is eating healthy, according to the organizers of the expo. But that's a different story.
Yeah. But there was one room, one of the console free play rooms. There we go. One I think was just all Xbox. I think there was just one room that was all Xboxes. There was another that was the LFG zone, which was just I think was all. Fighter sticks, arcade sticks. And then there's the third room, which was the mix of everything else, the Wii, the PS3, and a couple of Xboxes there. I spent so much time playing Brawl in that console free play room. I just, plugging in to whoever happened to be playing at the time, just, hey, you don't mind an extra player? And it was great. It was just a fun communal experience. Having, just playing Brawl with complete and total strangers, but having a blast.
It was fun. I mean, Ian and I got to play Marvel vs. Capcom 3, which was, I think, probably the most popular title, I think, from the minute the console free play rooms opened until they closed. But, it was great to be able to go in and to be able to play that. It's something I hadn't had a chance to check out yet, so being able to play it and seeing so many other people playing it was a lot of fun. The list was actually rather extensive. I was a little surprised at just how many titles they actually had available for people to borrow and play while they were hanging out in the console free play rooms. Definitely was a cool idea.
Keep in mind there were, roughly 70,000 people there, so I was hoping for a varied selection, and there was. The only thing I didn't like about it is that seemingly on the second and third day they started actually enforcing a time limit.
Well, yeah. They said they were going to if people kept staying in the room, and I guess there must have been people who... I mean, even I think the longest period that Ian and I were in there for was, an hour and a half, 2 hours at one point? And there were tons of open stations around us at that. It wasn't the kind of thing where, we felt somebody breathing down our neck because they just thought, okay, well... we've been here for an hour and there are no open consoles. Maybe we should move. There were tons of open systems. You were right, Brian, though. The one room was almost exclusively Xboxes, and maybe they needed to balance that out a little bit better. Maybe more people were interested in PlayStation and Wii games than they originally thought. But, I mean, that's for the organizers to work out. It makes sense, though, because, they want people to be able to enjoy themselves. There will be people who, for whatever the cost of the 3-day pass, maybe to them it's worth it to just walk up to the free play rooms the minute they open, sit down, and just play whatever they want until they get kicked out every night. And I think they were trying to combat that a little bit.
Well, it was, and there were people who did exactly that. Keep in mind, this the hours... of each day of the convention, except for Sunday, I think it was something like 8 a.m. to 2 a.m.
Something like that, yeah.
So, for, 18 hours or so, you could 18 hours gaming. says he, laughing.
Yeah.
Although I don't know if I could handle 18 hours of Brawl. That just...
I'm betting you could, and I'm betting there are listeners out there who have either attempted it or are now planning to.
I participated in the Super Smash Bros. Brawl tournament on day one. I had to go buy myself a GameCube controller since I was told that there would be a lack of GameCube controllers, so I went. There was a lot of vendors on the expo floor, now that I think about it. There was a lot of people, in addition to gaming developers and studios showing off their latest and greatest, there were actually stores, retailers there selling all sorts of gaming stuff. I went to one in which they were actually selling brand new GameCube controllers, which was a shock.
They had a Dreamcast on sale, didn't they?
Yeah, I think they did. I think I remember that.
Games Underground.
And
Video Games New York, I thought it was.
That was one
there
of the
several
vendors.
Guys that did indie, yeah.
And I was just very, very, very shocked at the fact that they were new GameCube controllers, right from Japan. They even had a whole bunch of Japanese, you know, language all over them. I'm like, oh, this box has just a lot of haw all over it. And so, unfortunately, the Super Smash Bros. Brawl tournament was very, very poorly organized. It was supposed to start at 8 o'clock. And it was supposed to be a 256-player field. They didn't get started until around 10. And by that time, half the field left. So many people were getting buys into the second round. I, unfortunately, did not get a buy into the second round. My opponent was actually still present. And I got my ass handed to me. Very easily.
Aww.
And I didn't think somebody could use Rob like a pro, but that was the case. And so, regardless, I don't even think there was a prize for winning. I think it was just bragging rights because I didn't see any mention of one at all. But over the course of the day, I just got just a lot of conversation with just random people. I had a conversation with a couple of girls who were dressed up in cast characters from Organization 13 from Kingdom Hearts. I spoke to a Samus. It was just a very, very interesting mix of all different types of gamers, men, women, little kids. I even saw a few gamer babies. They were cute.
The ones who are gaming, they just don't know they're gaming yet.
Yes.
They will game.
Yeah, there were some really cute, you know, young kids that had no idea what the heck was going on.
I also took a stop in the classic arcade room, which I was glad I did. Fun Spot, which is an arcade in New Hampshire. Fun Spot supplied the arcade consoles. Fun Spot is in the Guinness Book of World Records as the largest arcade on the planet. So, having been to this arcade, I was very glad to see that they brought all these arcade consoles over, and it was packed. Ben, you were there. That room was packed.
That room was awesome. But yes, there were so many people waiting. I mean, it was nothing like the lines on the show floor, but I mean, considering what it was, and there wasn't a game in there that was less than 20 years old, and that room was pretty crowded. There were lines for just about every single game.
I wanted to play Burger Time, but that didn't happen.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
No deviled eggs for you.
No, yeah, because I really wanted to relive the experience of being chased by deviled eggs and evil hot dogs and having to ward them off with pepper spray.
Sounds like a bad LSD trip.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. Day one. Who went to the concerts on day one?
I hit up all three.
Go on, Wyatt.
I was letting other people talk. Protoman. I've been waiting to see Protoman for a long time. I saw them last year. I managed to go to PAX last year for a total of 5 hours, thanks to, not blaming PAX of last year at all. It was all stuff that happened on my end, friends getting mixed up and things like that. But I saw Protoman. It was the last thing I got to do at the last PAX, and I was like, had no idea who the people were. I'm like, wait, so they're doing a rock opera about Mega Man, as if George Orwell had written the canon. I love these guys, and I just instantly fell in love with them, and I've been waiting all for another year to hear them again, as well as go to PAX, and they, you know, they blew it up really big. They had a really great. These guys love over the top. That is all they do is over the top. Three keyboardists, guitar, backup singers, trumpet backup singer, whole bunch of guitar, dressing up an actual Gatling gun for the Mega Man-ish character that worked. Absolutely ridiculous. Check out some of their songs. Let's see, I'm blanking on the names of some of my favorite, like Father of Death, Hope Rides Alone. They had great, great songs. It was really great to have them start off the show, and you know they went on for about an hour, I believe, and it was a blast, absolute blast for them.
Was Protoman the only performance? I don't think it was.
No, there was two others. Did anyone else here go to the Protoman? I know Jen did.
Yep, Jen is actually talking about it now as she's typing away. She was saying that Protoman was fantastic despite being absolutely ridiculous. Ridiculous? There's a word.
Ridiculous. Yeah,
they were absolutely ridiculously over the top, and that's I think part of their charm. Just you have no idea what to do with them. I describe them to people as part 80s metal, part big band, and part nerd, and they're fantastic doing it.
The other concerts on day one were MC Front a Lot and Metroid Metal.
Yeah, I went to each of those a little bit. I had never listened to either of the other two. MC Front a Lot was fantastic. It was really, I didn't know what to expect, and I stuck around for a good 4 or 5 songs before I ran downstairs to grab CDs and check out a little bit more of the expo. But I loved his stuff. The music video he had just made that he kind of premiered at PAX was fantastic. I loved his song about bad grammar and bad punctuation, and I'll be saying that over and over again with Jack until the end of my days. He was just really great, a really great performer. Anyone else here go to the MC Front a Lot part?
Yeah, I was there for MC Front a Lot. It was definitely interesting. Hadn't seen him before. But the video that he showed off was really cool. Apparently, it was a world premiere video of one of his songs, and then he did perform a couple of more songs. I didn't stay too long just because my girlfriend was there, and just the loud music was kind of giving her a little bit of a headache. But it was really cool, just like the size and the scale of the theater and how many people were there. And it was just seemed like a really relaxed, really friendly environment. I liked how they just didn't bother with chairs for most of the arena. They just had some setup in the back of the room, and then everything else was just standing room. Go wherever you want, kind of camp out. Reminded me of just the way some other concerts are set up, where people almost will sometimes even be outside or you know, just a more, way more relaxed environment. And I really like that.
Yeah. I'd actually like to elaborate a little bit on what Ben said. I didn't go to the concert that first night, but I, one thing that I noticed throughout the entire expo, and one thing that makes me really happy to be part of, you know, the nerd, the geek, the gaming culture, whichever part we all are. I basically met nobody that I didn't like. I mean, you know, even people who asked to get in on the next round of something we were playing, people I bumped into in the hallways got in their way. You know, I have never met and especially, you know, with over 70,000 people there, I think that's really saying something, that they can keep the atmosphere of the entire con so relaxed, but so affable. And I really didn't meet anybody there or speak to anybody there even for a quick second that was not either incredibly polite, friendly, or just had a good demeanor about them. I think that says something really about the culture and to the type of people the event attracts in the first place.
I wholeheartedly agree. You stole it right out of my head. While I was waiting in line for some of the events, you know, just striking up a conversation with anyone and everyone. I was playing, you know, games. You know, some people just whipped out card games or board games while waiting in line, and just the conversation and overall atmosphere. You know, it was a very, very pleasant communal experience. And I think that, you know, that sort of experience, you know, kept through the entire weekend, I felt, especially as we head into day two. And this is where I'm going to take a break. When we get back, we will talk about days two and three of the insanity. That was PAX East 2011. We will be right back.